Good morning. Today's daf in Moed Katan is Vav. We're in Hamad Beis. We're about a quarter of the way down to Hamad Beis. The Gemara is going to continue this discussion about Tzion Kvaros, marking off the graves. So this discussion comes up in yesterday's daf as a result of the Mishnah. The Mishnah going back to the beginning of the Masechta on Beis Min Aleph informed us what things we are allowed to do in Chol HaMoed. So there's an Issur Melacha in Chol HaMoed, but with numerous heterim. So one of the heterim is that if it's Tzarchei Rabim, if it's a public need, so then one is allowed to tend to it and care for it on Chol HaMoed itself. So one of the things that we're tending to is Tzion HaKvarim. So marking off the graves. If you have to lay down a fresh marking for the graves in order so that nobody walks over the graves, so you'll do so, and you'll do so even on Chol HaMoed. So this idea, so in yesterday's Daf, Daf Hey really was the source for this particular halacha. Gemara quoted numerous psukim. Over a half dozen psukim were quoted in terms of where the source of this halacha is. So you know the rule, if we're quoting more than one pasuk, so that means to say that it's probably not beferish anywhere, but you have various ramazim throughout Tanakh. And that's what we noted yesterday, various ramazim around Tanakh. The pasuk in Yecheskel, which is the first pasuk that was quoted yesterday, really is the most beferish pasuk. It's the most often a pasuk that we have regarding this particular halacha, but then an assortment of other halachas, including lifnei iver lo sitei mechshol, meaning you don't want to put a stumbling block in front of people. Over here, it's a halachic stumbling block. In other words, especially for the Kohanim or Ochli Truma, they're going to be walking over a grave and the grave is going to give off Tumas Ohel, and now they're going to become Tumah, the Truma is going to become Tumah. So basically, in order to mitigate and to inform and warn people about Tumah, so you mark off the graves. That's the general halacha that we discussed yesterday. And again, over here, it's in Moed Katan because the Mishnah taught us that you're allowed to do so even on Chol HaMoed. So with that stated, so we also quoted a brisa in yesterday's daf on Hamad Beis. So the brisa says that when you only have to make it tzion when there's tumas oel involved. And as we already discussed yesterday, so as far as human remains are concerned, sometimes it gives off tumas oel, and sometimes it does not give off tumas oel. And yesterday I went through the basic halachas in terms of when it does and when it doesn't. I'm not going to go through it again right now. But the brisa informed us yesterday that the only time that you have to make it tzion is only when there's a tumas oel consideration. Good. That's what we learned yesterday in the brisa. The first example of the brisa, however, was confusing, as the Gemara noted yesterday, because the brisa said that if you don't need to make it tzion if it's kezayis min hameis, to which the Gemara almost lost its mind. What do you mean? Kezayis min hameis is the principled example where it does give off tumas oel. So why would the brisa say that you don't have to make it tzion? So Rav Papa addressed it. Rav Papa gave an answer. I'm not going to go over Rav Papa's answer again. Anyway, that's what we're up to. So the brisa starts us off on the top of Hamad Beis. We went through the brisa. We went through the Gemara's first question, and now we continue. The Elohim Asfekos Chachos Upraos. Okay, so when do you have to make a tzion? So the brisa says that under the circumstance where you have a suffix, meaning it's possible that there's tumas oel, so then you have to make it tzion. So what are examples? So in the brisa, we went over two examples. The Gemara now is going to be masbir these two examples. So schachos ilan hamesach ala aretz. So as far as schachos ilan are concerned, so mesach ala aretz, meaning you have a branch, and the branch is basically going from a grave over a grave to over the street. And so now this branch is going to be serving as an oel. It will be the roof that is going that you're going to share together with the mace. So now, if this branch is now going over, so you have to mark the area under the branch. Paraos, avanim paraos yotzim min hageder. And as far as paraos are concerned, so basically you have stones that butt out into the street. Again, the stone is right. The exact configuration over here, I'm not perfectly clear, but whatever. You have a wall. And a stone is coming out, or a ledge, or whatever the case is. And again, it's over a cemetery, and it's over the street as well. So you got to mark off that area. Okay. So these are the areas that required tzion that we learned in the brisa, and the Gemara just gave a little bit more explanation. And then the brisa went on to describe also beis hapras, right? Esfekos are schachos pros and beis hapras. So here we have, as numerous times that we have throughout Shas, a discussion of what exactly is beis hapras. Now, the truth of the matter is that the beis hapras discussion is actually mishnayos, meaning you open up the Mishnah in Ovalos, which in the Daf Yomi we don't do. But if you were to open up the mishnayos over there, you would get you would be treated to a discussion of exactly what a beis hapras is. Our Gemara's discussion over here is going to be an abridged version of numerous Mishnayos that are mentioned over there in Masechta Olos. So over here, Beis HaPraske did none. So here we're going to be learning together one Mishnah Olos, the first Mishnah of the 17th Perek of Olos. HaChorish as a kever, harehu, hareos, Beis HaPraske, v'kamo osa, malom ma'ana, me'am ama. So let's say there is a grave buried in a field, and by mistake somebody plowed through the entire field with the grave there. So now this entire area now is considered a Beis HaPraske, meaning, and forgive me by the way because it's going to be graphic, but basically what you have now are remains being scattered out throughout the entire field, and so you have human remains throughout the whole field, and so therefore this area now is going to be designated as a Beis HaPraske. The exact area is going to be Malom Ma'ana. Generally speaking, the amount that is plowed at one parcel at a time. And that is Me'am Amma. I'm assuming over here we're talking about 100 by 100 Ammas. Okay, it's a pretty sizable area. But again, as per the general area in which fields are plowed. Okay, now, what we're learning together is the following. There's this area called the Beis HaPraske. And by the way, the word pras itself, if you haven't figured it out, so it means pieces. In other words, there are pieces of human remains that are scattered throughout the field. And what we're now suggesting, not suggesting, we're saying, is that the Mishnah, or the Braisa, that says that you have to mark off the area, is that there's a possible concern of Tumas Oel. And therefore, you have to mark it off. And to that, the Gemara is going to object. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. I certainly understand the concern, but Tumas Oel is not part of the concern. Meaning, it's true that there are human remains that are scattered throughout the field. That part's true. However, for there to be Tumas Oel, so what there has to be is a Kazayis Men Hameis. So there are bones that are scattered out throughout the field, and the bones are going to give off Tumas Maga, Tumas Masa, but it's not going to give off Tumas Oel. And generally speaking, when it comes to a Beis HaPraske, Tumas Oel is not on the table for concern. And as we established in yesterday's daf, the only time that you need to make a tzion, a marking, is only when there's a Tumas Oel consideration. That's what bothers the Gemara. Gemara asks exactly this question. Ubeis HaPraske mitame ba'oel. Is that in fact true that you have to worry about Tumas Oel when it comes to Ubeis HaPraske? So let's say you have the following. Rashi over here describes that you're en route to doing a mitzvah. Okay, the classic example is you're headed to Shecht, you're coming Pesach. Fine. And now, in order to get from A to B, so you happen to be walking through a Beis HaPraske. So generally speaking, you're not allowed to. In other words, it's meaning if you're concerned about becoming Tamei, walking through a Beis HaPraske will make you Tamei. However, now that there's a consideration that you are en route to doing a mitzvah, so there are a couple of kulas in terms of walking through a Beis HaPraske. Kula number one, Menafech Adam Beis HaPraske Vaholech. You take out your leaf blower. And what you do is you walk through the Beis HaPraske with your leaf blower, blowing the area in front of you. Again, the concern of the Beis HaPraske is not that you're walking over a mace, meaning because again, Tumas Oel is not on the table for consideration. The only concern is that you're going to actually step on a bone chip, and that's going to give off Tumas Maga. So if you have your leaf blower, I know it's slightly anachronistic, I'm aware, but if you have your leaf blower and you're blowing it in front of you as you're walking, so whatever bone chips that are in front of you are going to be blown to the side. And so that's one kula. Now, back in the day, in other words, menafech generally means that you're going to blow. You're going to sit there with your mouth and start blowing the area in front of you. Okay. So even from the Gemara standpoint, there must have been some mechanical blower that they had back in the day. A bellow. Okay. So anyway, Rav Yehuda Barami, Mishmei Deula Amar Beis HaPraske Nidosh Tahor, a second kula, is that let's say there's already a worn out pathway. So again, the only concern of the Beis HaPraske as we're presenting it right now is bone chips that are on the road. So over here, if there's already a worn out pathway, so there's not going to be any bone chips on the worn out pathway, and that would be fine. So there are a couple of kulas that allow you to walk through the Beis HaPraske. But what comes out clearly over here is that Tumas Oel is not a consideration. And so the question is, why do I need a tzion? Why do I need a marking? So Amara Papa Lokasha Kambasada Shava Bakever Kambasada Shenechrech Bakever. So the Gemara says, okay, so what we're going to suggest now is as follows. There are two types of Beis HaPraske. There's one Beis HaPraske which we have been describing, which is that somebody plowed through the field. Okay, it was a mistake. He shouldn't have done it, obviously. But he plowed through the field, spreading out the remains throughout the field. Again, that obliterates, that takes care now of Tumas Oel, meaning we are not concerned at this point in time that there is a kazayis of human remains anywhere situated within the field. And whatever human remains are there just spread out through the field. But again, the only concern now is contact. So that's the bias. Shenech Rashba. Sorry. Sada. Didn't mean house. Sada Shenech Rashba. That's one type of base of pras. And you're right. That kind of base of pras does not require tzion, does not require marking. Ah, but then we're talking about another type of base of pras where you lost the kever. Meaning you know that there was a kever there. It was previously marked. And now we lost it. Right, I guess the field itself has some sort of natural perimeter to it, or even if it's not natural. In other words, the field itself had a perimeter to it. You knew that there was a kever somewhere there, and you lost it. And we lost all tradition of where it was. Okay, in a moment, the Gemara is going to suggest maybe somebody of an older generation can tell us where it is. But right now, we don't know where it is. So under those circumstances, now that kind of base of pras, which, by the way, the word base of pras is a little bit misleading in that circumstance. Because it's not that we have pieces of remains throughout. In other words, we're just borrowing the term base of pras to describe now this kind of field where there's somebody's buried underground. It just happens to be. We don't know where. So now there's an OL consideration. And now under those circumstances, you have to mark off the entire field. Okay. The Gemara says Visada. Now, in our Gemara, we have the word Shenechrash. The Gon says, let's change it to Nevan. Visada Sheneva Bakever Base of Pras Karile. So the Gemara says, basically, our question, it's shaykh to call it a base of pras, meaning the whole term base of pras means that there are pieces. And if it's a field that we plowed through, okay, so we understand. Uncomfortable and certainly indelicate, but we understand. But if we are describing a field where I just simply lost the cemetery, meaning I know somebody's buried underneath, I just don't know where, you're going to use the word base of pras. The Gemara says, yeah. In other words, it's a borrowed term, but yes, the term is in fact borrowed. V'hatanan. And here we have another Mishnah over there in Olos. This is in the 18th parak of Olos. Shlosha beis haprasin, sada sheneva bakever, sada shenech rosh bakever, v'sade, we have an argir sabuchin, the Gon has a word kuchin. Okay, so basically, yes, it is a borrowed term. We're going to be describing it to describe a field where it was plowed through, which is probably, it's my guess, I run the risk of being wrong. But my guess is that the primary application of the word base of pras is a field that's plowed through, because that's where the term is most literally applied. And then we just simply take that term and we borrow it and we use it to describe even a field where we lost a kever. And then even if it's a sade kuchin. Okay, now that third example, what is sade kuchin? That's the Gemara's next question. So my sade buchin or kuchin. So Rabbi Yeshua bar Abba mishmedula amar sade shemaftirin ba mason. So it's a field where basically there's a handoff. Okay, I say handoff, I mean, this is Rashi's description over here. Basically, when a mace is taken from one place to another, so we have funeral chapels. Okay, so back in the good old days, so it's kind of like a funeral chapel, but it was more out in the field. And so one Chevra Kedisha would be passing off the mace to another Chevra Kedisha. Now, over here, what I'm about to say is definitely indelicate, but I'm just saying over Rashi right now. And what happens sometimes is that the body has gone through a good amount of decomposition, and sometimes you lose a limb along, you know, in the handoff when you're passing from one to another. Okay, it's strange, and I'm obviously like whatever. Why is the limb just simply left there? Why is it not also transported together with? I don't know. But regardless, the point is that in these fields where you have the mace being passed from one to another, so sometimes remains are remaining in that area, and that's another area now where it has the status of a base of pras. Okay. And basically what happens is a yeush balim. So the Gemara over here uses a generic term, a general term to describe what I just described in much more detailed terms. My description comes directly from Rashi. But basically yeush, people gave up. Meaning that, yeah, we're gonna transport the remains, and there's a piece that fell off. Okay, it's okay. It's not okay, which is why I'm obviously uncomfortable saying over the Gemara this way. But that's seemingly what the simple pshat of the Gemara is. Just people are not ready to pick up all the pieces. Okay, Adkan, that doesn't bring us to the end of the sugya, but this is a point now we're gonna pause and just simply recap. So basically, what we're saying now is that some base of process need to be marked off, some do not. And the general idea is that if there is an OL consideration, needs to be marked off. If there's no OL consideration, so then it doesn't need to be marked off. So if we have a field that was plowed over, no tumas oil consideration, doesn't need to be marked off. If there is a grave there, we just don't know where it was, right? The stone was removed and we just simply don't know in the field where it is. So under those circumstances, now there's tumas oil as a real consideration. So therefore you have to mark off the whole area. So basically there are multiple types of beis hapras. Some need to be marked off. Some do not need to be marked off. We continue. So the Gemara says, okay, so if I'm understanding correctly, so once the field is plowed through, so it's a beis hapras, but it doesn't need to be marked off. The Gemara says, wait 1 second, Vatanya. Can we look together at the following brisa? Tosefta of Oolos. So let's say the field is marked off. So, and we don't know what's happening over here in this field. So now, if there are trees. So what does that mean if there are trees? So if there are trees, that means that someone planted the trees. Well, prior to the planting of the trees, so someone had to plow the field. In other words, so the trees are indicative of the fact that this field is a plowed field. So that's exactly what the Braisa says. So biyadusha nechrosh ba'kever. Ein ba'ilanos biyadusha avad ba'kever. And if there are no trees over there, so this is an unplowed field. And Rav Yehuda omer, achiei sham zaken otam lefisha ena kol bekiyim b'davar. And Rav Yehuda says that the trees are not going to be enough of an indicator. You need a zaken otam. You need somebody who is either an elder or a tamid chacham, and he's going to tell you the history of this field. But in other words, the trees themselves are not enough evidence. Anyway, but we'll come back to the position of Rabbi Yehuda momentarily. But what's coming out over here is that the field is marked off, and then we're only trying to determine whether it's a plowed field or not a plowed field. But what's clear over here is that even if it were a plowed field, it'd be marked off. So that obviously is difficult. So Amar Papa Kitanya he besada shava bakever did sainua. So the Gemara says, okay, so what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to revisit the Braisa and give the following narrative to the Braisa. And that is that no. The reason why it was marked off is because there was a cemetery over there. There was a grave over there. We lost a grave. We don't know in the field where the grave was. And that's it, period. And as a result of that, so now they marked it off. Okay. Afterwards, what then happens is that somebody plowed it. But the marking was only as a result of the fact that it was a lost grave there. That's why it was marked off. And then subsequently, somebody plowed it through. How do I know that somebody plowed it through? So then the debate of, are the trees going to be good enough evidence? Do I need a person to recount? That's the pshat in the braisa. So yesh ba'ilanus bi'adush ne'achrosh ba'kever, ein ba'ilanus bi'adush ava ba'kever. Okay, so that's what's going on over there in the braisa, meaning the plowing is occurring after it was marked off. So v'lechesh dilma, ilanos mi'gavai ve'kever mi'brai. So the Gemara over here just has a couple of configuration questions. I don't know, says the Gemara, maybe the trees are interior and the kever is outside. Meaning, how do I know that just because the trees are there, the entire field was plowed over? Maybe the plowing was only in the area of the trees? So kedamar ula ba'om demalagvulin. Hachanami ba'om demalagvulin. So the Gemara says, no. The Bryce is talking about a scenario where the trees are on the edge. So the Gemara says, okay, the trees are on the edge. So Vidilma, as we turn to the top of Avamad Aleph, Tomebigavai Vilans Mebrai. So the Gemara says, okay, so let's reverse the question. Maybe the plowing was done on the edge where the trees are, and maybe interior, there was no plowing that was done. So how do I know the entire area was plowed? So Bimisubachim. So the Gemara says, okay. So what we're going to suggest, as you probably would imagine, is that the trees are not organized in one central area, either interior or exterior, but the trees are scattered throughout the field. So therefore, in order to prepare for the planting of the trees, so that the entire field was plowed through. Alternatively, what we could suggest is what we said just a couple days ago, or I should say better, yesterday. And that is that when you mark off the immediately after the tumma has come to an end. Or in this case, the possible tumma has come to an end. Meaning the markings themselves would not extend anywhere beyond where the tumma could possibly be. So therefore, we're left to assume that anywhere and everywhere within the markings could possibly be where the tumma is. Okay. So basically what we did is that we went back to the Braisa. Even though the Braisa sounds like we're marking off a plowed field, the Gemara says, no, that's not the pshat. The pshat is that the field had a cemetery over there, had a grave over there. We lost it. It was marked off. And then subsequently, then it was plowed through. That's the pshat in the Braisa. Okay. And now, as long as we quoted the Braisa, so now the Gemara just is going to spend a moment talking about that second opinion. How do I know the field was plowed through? We have the trees. Trees are enough evidence that the field was plowed through. And Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Achiyei Sham Zaken Otam Lefi She'ena Kol Bekim Badavar. Okay, so, and Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. And he says, no, the trees themselves are not enough evidence. You need testimony, either by somebody of the older generation or Tamei Chacham. So the Gemara is just going to make a comment over here, meaning somebody of an older generation, I get it. He's been around. He knows the history of this field. But somebody's a Tamei Chacham, just because he's a Tamei Chacham, he now knows whether this field was plowed or not. The Gemara says, that's right. So Amar Abaye Yishmai Minat Surba Mirabana Dika Bamasa Kol Mila Damasa Ala Ramya. So the Gemara says, yeah, that's absolutely correct. Abaye says that when you have a Tamei Chacham in the town, so it's part of the responsibility of a Tamei Chacham not only to be knowledgeable in the body of Torah, but on top of that, he also has to know the dealings, the ordeals of what's going on over here in the town. He has to know a little bit of the town history. In other words, the part of the town's responsibility is put on his shoulders. It's what you and I call a Rav, right? The Rav has to, obviously, right, with discretion and professionalism, but the Rav has to be involved in the affairs of what's going on in the town. And so, yeah, and Enachinami, if a field might possibly have Tumah in there, we need to know a little bit of the history of the field. Yeah, we do expect the local Tamei Chacham to know this information. Amar Rav Yehuda. Okay, we have a little bit more to go to discuss regarding fields, possible Tumah. This will take us halfway down our Amud of today's daf. So just a couple more halachas. Amar Rav Huna Matza Evan Mitzienis. So let's say you have a stone, and the stone itself is marked. Now, generally speaking, we assume that the markings are creating a perimeter, which, right, that's the, if you had a visualization of what we've been learning up until now, so that's probably like a good visual. In other words, either the grave itself is marked, or in the last cases that we've been discussing, the entire field is marked because the field itself is a steha pras, a besa pras. But now over here, so we're going to be dealing with a couple of different types of markings. Over here, just a single mark, right? The marking itself is just on the stone. Now what? So that's Amar Rav Yehuda, Matzah Evan Mitzienis, Tachteha Tame. So the area directly underneath is Tame, right? And, right, it's, sorry for being a little bit indiscreet, but X marks the spot. So the area directly underneath is Tame, and that's it. Meaning, so that anywhere around the area is going to be Tohar. Shtayim. Now,
how big is the stone?
It's a fair question. I would guess, and that I'd rather not. I don't know. It's a really fair question. Shtayim, if let's say now you have two markings, so right, and they're somewhat contiguous. They're not contiguous. They're proximate to one another. So im yeshid b'neim tameh. Now, if let's say the marking connects the two dots, okay, so the tumah is underneath. Now, if there is no markings connecting the two, so b'neim tahor. So that must mean now that basically there is tumah under the two markings, but not between the two markings. So the Gemara says, now, wait 1 second. Even if there's no plowed area in between them, v'atanya, the Gemara says, what about the following? So this tosefta, matza evan tach achas mitzienes tach tame. Okay, so the opening of the braisa, good. Total corroboration with what we just saw, and that is that if I have a stone and it's marked, only the area underneath is tamei. Shtayim. Now, if I have two, in other words, two markings, so im yesh chorosh b'neim, b'neim tahor. So if the area between them is plowed, so the area in between is tahor. V'im la b'neim tamei, but if it's not plowed, the area in between is going to be tamei. So in the braisa, so we added a qualification, which presumably Rav Yehuda did not say. And that is that the only time that the area between the two markings are going to be tahor is only if the area in between is plowed. So Amar Papa Hacha Kishasid Shafuch Al Rashem Umaru De Lakan Lakan. So the Gemara says, no, the Bryce is talking about the following. The sit is placed on the two points, again, somewhat proximate to one another, and it's not a centrally located marking, but rather it's somewhat heading directed towards the center. So e ikah chorish benem benem tahor demer machmas chorishu di ikpal. So in other words, so why are the markings now somewhat? I was going to say leaning in, not so much leaning in, but in other words, they seem to be headed towards the towards one another. Oh, so if there was a plow that went through them, okay, fine. So the plow basically took it. However, v'ilo said debeni benihu v'tame. The Gemara says, but if it wasn't plowed, it means that at one point in time the markings went all the way through, and so therefore the area in between is going to be tame. Okay. Just one more set of a series of halachas over here. Amar Avasi, mitzad echad mitzuyan hu tame v'chol sadei kulo tahara. Okay, so lines of markings. So if it's one line, so we can assume that only the area underneath the line is going to be tame. Shnayim heim tameim v'chol sadei kulo tahara. Now, if I have two lines, not clear over here if the lines are parallel or if the lines are perpendicular. I'm not sure if it makes a difference. Regardless. So, but it's not, the point is that it's not creating a perimeter under those circumstances. So once again, only the areas directly underneath are going to be tame. Shlosha, and we're even going to say the same thing regarding three. So over here, I assume the shape is a U, but still, it's not a full perimeter, and therefore, only the area underneath is going to be tame. Heim tamein v'cholasad dekula tara, arba heim taran v'cholasad dekula tameya. Ah, but once we have a perimeter, so now we know. Then we go all the way back to where we started the whole discussion. Once you create a perimeter, so we go back to what we learned yesterday, and that is that the markings themselves are directly outside of the Tumah. Meaning, on one hand, it's outside, and on the other hand, it's directly outside the Tumah. Because what we don't want to do is we don't want to encroach on Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, but at the same time, however, we want to make sure that that when you step on the markings, you're not stepping on the Tumah itself. Therefore, when in fact you're creating a perimeter, so you're going to be doing it. You're going to be doing so directly outside of the Tumah. Okay, Rashi over here does struggle a little bit, right? As we're pretty much now not totally done, but we're done for the time being in terms of marking off graves. Rashi does struggle a little bit, meaning what we've concluded on this issue is that when you're marking a grave via perimeter, so you're putting it around the Tumah, but not directly on the Tumah. Meanwhile, all the Gemaras that we've said now for the last 5 minutes, right, on a stone, one line, two lines, three lines, so there it's directly on the Tumah. So it's a little bit confusing, meaning when making a perimeter, it's outside the Tumah, but when it's a mark or a line, so it's directly on the Tumah itself. So Rashi notes, in other words, that seems to be somewhat inconsistent. Rashi quotes in the name of one of his Rebbeim, right? You can see the Rashi. Matzah Evan Achas Mitzienes. So Rashi writes over there, Besit Tachter Tame Umi Pi Maria Zaken. So he quotes one of his Rebbeim. Evan Achas Mitzienes Sheishit Al Gaba De Inu Sarach Laharchi Katzion. Mina Evan Lefisha Evan Gavoa Al Gabe Karka. Oh. This answer works well when it comes to the stone. And that is the stone is protruding. The stone is a little bit above ground. And so therefore, the marking itself is going to be enough of an indicator that you shouldn't be stepping on it. And that's why you're not going to be stepping on the stone itself that's marked. However, if we're talking about on the ground itself, so people aren't going to notice it immediately, and that's why the markings have to be not on the Tumah, but in front of the Tumah. Even as Rashi says that, I still struggle a little bit because we just went over the Gemaras regarding one line, two lines, where there it certainly sounds like the markings are directly over the mace. Okay, so I get what Rashi's trying to solve for. I don't know if it solves for all the Gemaras over here. Okay, Yosin Afala Klein. We're in Vav Amud Aleph. We're halfway down on the Amud, and a couple of words regarding Klein, and that is on Chol HaMoed. What they're gonna do. Is that, when I say they, probably the Beis Din, is that they're going to send out Shleichim and they're going to go out there. And if anyone has a mixture of different grains and grapes that are growing in this, that are growing together, so that of course is Kalayim. So you're not allowed to plant them together. They're not allowed to grow together. And what they're going to do is they're going to rip them out of the ground. Okay. So this should sound familiar, by the way, back in Shkolim. We discussed this in detail. In fact, numerous Gemaras that we're going to be saying over today, We saw back in Shkalim. So it'll be a wonderful review. So we start off immediately by quoting the very first Mishnah in Shkalim. Because what our Mishnah sounds like is that they're going out in Chol HaMoed. They're going out in Chol HaMoed, right? Newsflash. They're going out well before Chol HaMoed. In fact, let's take a look at that first Mishnah in Shkalim. So here's what's going to happen. Day number one of Adar, so that's when the announcement is made that everyone's got to give their machitzes a shekel. And then Va'al HaKlayim. And then announcements made, also everyone check your field to make sure you don't have klayim in your field. And then B'chamisha Asar Bo, now on the 15th day of Adar, Karan Bo is a Megillah B'krachim, all cities are reading the Megillah. Now why isn't the Mishnah over there mention the 14th day of Adar? Because it's not Masechta Megillah. It's Masechta Shkalim. Meaning it's, the 15th of the month is mentioned really for a different reason, but as long as we mention the 15th of the month, so the Mishnah didn't want to miss the opportunity talking about the Megillah, but it's not the, it's not the main location for discussion of the Megillah. That's called Masechta Megillah. Fine. So Koran is the Megillah B'krachim. V'yotzen l'kavis ha-sadrachim l'sakin rechovos v'lamud ha-mikvos. So, and now on the 15th day of Adar, we are now 1 month away from Pesach. People are now starting to make their trek to Yerushalayim. So now it's a great time to check the roads. Make sure that the roads are safe. Check the mikvos. Make sure the mikvos are kosher. Generally, any public good, any public service, infrastructure, that's a great checkpoint. And then, and it's the end of the Mishnah, obviously, that we're interested. What also happens on the 15th day of Adar, so that's when you remark the graves, and Yotzen ala klayim, and it's at that point in time that you're also going to go out to make sure that people have not planted their klayim. 15th day of Adar. So now, the confusion of the Gemara is that 15th day of Adar, you're going out for klayim, and then on Chol HaMoed, let's assume Chol HaMoed Pesach. And on Chol HaMoed Pesach, you're going to go out again? That's a month later, right? And as Rashi points out over here, the fact that our Mishnah says that on Chol HaMoed, you're going out to check the roads, so Rashi says that never bothers the Gemara. Because even if you check the roads on the 15th day of Adar, so, right, it rains, and the roads can get ruined a month later. So Rashi says, The fact that they're going out again for infrastructure, that doesn't bother the Gemara. But what does bother the Gemara, as Rashi over here articulates, is that once you ripped out the klayim in the 15th day of Adar, that's it. They're ripped out. So now you have to go out again in Chol HaMoed. So the Gemara gives basic answers we could have all thought of. Rav Elazar, Rav Yossi, Rav Bechina, Chana Mar Kama, Bechir Kama Ba'afil. So the Gemara says, okay, answer number one is that everything grows at the same time. You have the earlier crop, you have the later crop. So on the 15th of Adar, you take care of the earlier crop. On Chol HaMoed Pesach, you take care of the later crop. V'chanamar kam b'zorin, kam b'yirakos. Same basic answer, right? Zerin yirakos. Okay, please don't look to me to tell you which one grows early, which one grows later. Okay. Anyway, that Rashi happens to say over here. Regardless, so it's the same basic point. In other words, not all crops grow at the same time. So on the 15th day of Adar, it's a good time to get out there, make sure that there's no klayim. And then a Chol HaMoed, a later crop coming a little bit later in the season. So you go ahead and you rip them out at a later point in time. Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan. Lo shanu ela she'ein nitzan nikar. Aval nitzan nikar yotzen aleihem. Okay, and as far as the idea that we don't go out before Adar and before Chol HaMoed, that's only if you don't see the... if you don't see them sprouting. But once you see them sprouting, you can even go out even a little bit earlier. Ma'ishan b'chol shamoed denafkinan. Okay, wonderful question the Gemara is about to ask. And that is, look, the idea is that people plant the klayim on purpose, not on purpose, regardless. And so the shluchei beis din are going to go out there and they're going to make sure that there's no klayim out there. Okay, now, when do you go out? Chol HaMoed. Of all the times to send them, can't you think of a better time? Meaning... Right, Chol HaMoed, basically, we want people not to work. And now, Chol HaMoed, now infrastructure, that's Sarchei Rabim, I get. But over here, Kalayim, making sure that people don't have climb in their field, how about sending them out before Chol HaMoed? Or even, how about this? How about sending them out after Chol HaMoed? Dafa, they should be going out in Chol HaMoed to take care of something that doesn't need to be taken care of on Chol HaMoed itself. So it's a wonderful question. Get ready for the answer. So the Gemara... Get ready. So, Ma'ishan b'chol shemoy denafkinan, Amar Rav Yaakov, Amar Rav Yochanan, Mishum skar pula, demuzle gaban. So the Gemara says, you know why? because it's cheaper. You can get cheaper labor on Chol HaMoed. Okay, people generally speaking are not working on Chol HaMoed. And now I understand sometimes the dynamics of economics are is that if people are not working, sometimes it costs more money to hire people. Okay, so obviously over here the economy at the time is that generally speaking you can get cheaper labor in Chol HaMoed. Okay, let's just assume that that's in fact the case, and so therefore because now the labor is cheap, so we're going to use Chol HaMoed now as a great opportunity. Now the Gemara says, well let's piggyback this point off of another point. And that is Amar Zivdi, Temerav Misharsha, Shmamina ki Avinalu Ischar, Michumas Alishka Yavinaluhu. So the Gemara says, okay, now who's paying for it? Meaning on whose dime are the Shluchei Basin going out and taking care of the Klayim? So it's coming from Chumas Alishka. It's public money. And the Gemara now is going to teach us that when it comes to public money, so you are on a budget. And so what you want to do is you do not want to overspend. Okay? I know. We seem to go in the other direction, but okay. Okay. But but basically Chumas Halishka is public money, and so therefore we want to conserve to the point where we're ready to hire people on Chol HaMoed because it's going to be cheaper. Because the Gemara says, the Isa Kadacha Midihu Yavina Luhu, my nafka laminayu, kokamada bailiten luhu. So the Gemara says, because look, if it was the owner's responsibility, the landowner's responsibility, which parenthetically, by the way, I could have made a wonderful argument that it should be the landowner's responsibility to pay for it. Why isn't it his responsibility? I don't have a great answer to that question. But regardless, because it's public money, so we're ready to even go and hire people on Chol HaMoed because labor is cheaper, because again, when it comes to public money, so you want to save as much as possible.
Why are people working on Chol HaMoed though?
Hmm?
But why are people working on Chol HaMoed getting paid?
So again, it's a mitzvah, right? In fact, back in the Mishnah, when we saw the Mishnah, so Tosfos says it's a mitzvah. It's not just simply, you know, it's not just an activity. And because now we're using public money, so therefore you can you're going to hire people for Chol HaMoed. But the principal answer, I would guess, going back to the Mishnah, is because we're talking about a mitzvah over here to remove the klein. The Ad Kam Amar Shmo Bar Yitzchak Osa Shishanino. So the Gemara over here, first of all, gives us now the ratio in terms of when is a klayim, and that is, this is a Mishnah klayim, Kol Sar Sheyesh Ba Rova Zera Mimin Echad Yimat. So over here, the ratio is 1 to 24. Okay, that's the in terms of when exactly it's going to be klayim. The Hatanya She Hitkinishu Mafkirin Kol Sar Dekula. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. So you're telling me that the solution to the klayim problem is going to be that we're going to hire shlichim, shluchei beisdin, to go out there and rip out the klayim. The Gemara says, right? That's a solution? No. Don't we remove the field from the owner? We disavow the field from the owner. Right? Isn't that the solution? Lokasha kan kodem takana kan lachar takana. The Gemara says, yeah, that used to be the solution until things changed. Meaning the original solution was to hire shluchei beisdin to go out there to the field. Okay, and that changed. And the Gemara over here gives us, we saw this back in Shkalim, Detanya, we learned in a brisa, Rishona yokrim mashlichim lifnei behemtan. So the original proposal and the original action point in terms of what to do when people had kalayim is that the shluchei beisdin would come, rip it out of the field, and leave it there. Oh, great. Good food for my animal. Perfect. So v'ayubale batzmes mechem shtei smachos. So echad shemenach shin lahem sadosem v'achir shemashlichim lifnei behemtam. So now the owner said, thank you very much. That's fantastic. So not only were they not punished for having klayim in the field, but they were rewarded. I have now outside labor that I don't have to pay for. That's weeding my field. That's one thank you. Oh, and another thank you. Oh, and you're leaving it in my field for my animal to eat? Okay, so that's two thank yous. So obviously now you are certainly disincentivizing, in fact, just the opposite. You're motivating people to grow klayim. That's no good. Okay, it's a lesson learned. So they had their board meeting, their Beis Din meeting, and they said, okay, new improvement on the takana. We're going to rip out the klayim. We're going to throw it onto the street. Okay, so okay, fine. So I take away one of the thank yous, but I'm still down to one thank you. Thank you very much for weeding my field. I appreciate it. So it kinishu yu mafkin klasa dekula. Okay, so eventually, so we have to disincentivize people from growing klayim. Okay, so we find klayim in your field, so we just simply remove the field from you, right? This is predicated on the principle of hefker based in hefker. Based in has this kind of authority where they could take a property of yours and just simply remove you as the owner. They have that. They have the ability to do so, and so that would be the that would be the final solution to the problem of people growing klayim. Our Mishnah said that the Shluchei Beis Din would go out there. Okay, our Mishnah was describing an earlier stage. Mishnah. Okay. Perfect. Okay, time permits us. We're going to go through the next section and be a little bit more caught up. Rav Lezman ben Yaakov Omer Moshkan is amai mi ilan ilan uvavash lo yashka es kol asadeh. Okay. Shitas Rav Lezman ben Yaakov. Now, hopefully this sounds familiar because we saw this in the beginning of the Masechta, and this will be a review. But this is the actual Mishnah. Earlier in the Gemara, we quoted the Mishnah, but here's the actual Mishnah itself. Rav Lezman ben Yaakov says, as far as trees are concerned, trees are like Beis HaShlachim. Right? Remember the first Mishnah of our Masechta? So we said that when you have a field that's thirsty and really demands a lot of water, so in Chol HaMoed you can water it. That's a hefset. So as far as trees are concerned, trees are given that same status as the Beis HaShlachim, meaning not the field and not the area between the trees, but the actual trees themselves. And therefore, you're allowed to water trees on Chol HaMoed. But according to Rav Lezer ben Yaakov, but not the land in between the trees. And Zraim Shalo Shasel, if Ne'amoed, Lo Yashkem Ben Moed. Now, as far as any seeds that were not watered before Chol HaMoed, you cannot water them on Chol HaMoed itself. As Rashi points out over here, so as a result of the fact that clearly these seeds are not super thirsty, evident by the fact that you didn't water them before Chol HaMoed, so now on Chol HaMoed you certainly have no head to water them. The Chachamim matir b'zeh v'zeh. Now the Chachamim say both are mutter. Both the watering between the trees and even the watering of the seeds that's going to be mutter, even on Chol HaMoed. This sheet of the Chachamim. So who are the Chachamim over here? So Rashi takes us all the way back to the beginning of the Masechta, and Rashi points back to that brisa that we saw in Beis Amad Aleph, right? If you recall, if you remember, right, it's a great opportunity for Chazara. So on Beis Amad Aleph, they quoted the brisa on the bottom of the Amud, and the brisa brought in three opinions in terms of what fields you're allowed to irrigate on Chol HaMoed. So the first opinion was the sheet of Rav Meir, and Rav Meir says that you could water any field, even a Beis Abal. So Rashi says over here that the Chachamim of our Mishnah is in fact the Shita of Rebbe Meir. Okay. I'm Rav Yehuda. Im haisa sada mitunenes mutter. If the field is a sada mitunenes. Okay, what does that mean? Rashi describes over here a sada mitunenes. You see the first Rashi in the Gemara? So, hadam Rav Elazar v'lo yashka sada kulava. Im haisa sada mitunenes lacha v'yavsha. So, the field was moist prior to Chol HaMoed. And then, for whatever reason, it dried up really quickly. Mutar lahashkosa. So that field you're allowed to irrigate. Afagav dahavisa de besa baal. And even though it's a besa baal field, which generally speaking, you cannot water, but over here, it came in dahavi lacha ad hashta, ilomashka lo have pseri yisera. Ilomashka la have pseri yisera. So, but over here, by virtue of the fact that we see that it went from being moist to now being dry, so we see now that the field is at risk of being lost. And again, now this falls under the category of hefsed, and therefore you're allowed to water it. That is a sada mitunenis. Tanya mehachi, the Gemara quotes a braisa. And that is kesha amru asal ashkosam b'moed, even though there's a generally standing iser that you're not allowed to water fields, a sada besabal, lo amru la bizraim shalosh shasum lifnei amoed. That's only talking about where the seeds were not watered before Chol HaMoed, meaning that they didn't need water before Chol HaMoed. But if, in fact, they were watered before Chol HaMoed, meaning that they need a lot of water, so then you're allowed to water them on Moed itself. And here's the Bryce where it spells out that if the field is mitunenis, again, we're going to go with Rashi's Pshat, where it was moist and then, for whatever reason, it dried overnight. So then mutter, so under those circumstances, it would be mutter. Vein mashkin sad de gerir b'moed, or gerid b'moed. If, however, it is a generally dry field, so then you're not allowed to water it because we weren't watering it before Chol HaMoed. Therefore, you can't water it on Chol HaMoed itself. And once again, the Brice ends off with the Shitas Chachamim. which if we could borrow the Rashi from the Mishnah, we can assume maybe. We can assume that Shitas Rabbi Meir, and that you are in fact allowed to water such a field. The Ravina says that if you put like a little bit, like a mist of water over it before Chol HaMoed, you can continue doing so on Chol HaMoed itself. Basically, on Chol HaMoed, you can maintain whatever it was beforehand. If beforehand, you didn't water it, in other words, you didn't give it like full irrigation, but you sprayed water on top of it, so you could do that even on Chol HaMoed as well. So the Gerid, my time, the Afle Mashvelei Charfa. Hachanami Afle Mashvelei Charfa. So as far as the Sadi Gerid is concerned, why is it that you're not allowed to water it? If you water it, so that which normally comes later is going to come earlier. So you can put a mist of water on a wheat field during the Shemitah year, but not on Chol HaMoed. And Brisa says that you could do so on Chol HaMoed and on Shemitah as well. So the Gemara says, okay, machlokes hatanayim. So Rav Elazar ben Yaakov will tell you that you can't. Rav the Chachamim say that you can. Tanya Idach, the Gemara quotes the Braisa. Marvitzin stay love on Erev Shvius, because they shiasu yirakos b'shvius. So what you could do is that you could put a mist of water on top of the field prior to Shemitah, so that it would produce during Shemitah. V'lo odal shemarvitzin stay love on b'shvius. You can even spray water on top of a wheat field during the Shemitah year, because they shiasu yirakos on Motzei Shvius, so that the yirakos will come out on Motzei Shvius. Meaning, to water it in total, that you're not allowed to do. But to spray on some water on top, okay, sprinkling water on top of it, so that in of itself would be okay, even during the Shemitah year. Adkan, that takes us to the end. Let's quickly recap our daf today. So over the course of this morning, so it's Siyon HaKvaras. That was the discussion mostly in yesterday's daf. We finished off yesterday's daf and the discussion regarding Siyon HaKvaras. The basic idea to walk away with from today's daf is that if Tumas Oel is on the table, if that's a concern, it requires a Siyon. If Tumas Oel is off the table, so then it does not require a Tziyun. So there are different types of a Beis HaPras. One Beis HaPras is where there was a cemetery there, we lost it, right? And under those circumstances, there's a Tumas Oel concern consideration that requires a Tziyun. On the other hand, there's another type of Beis HaPras where you plow through it. So if I plow through it, it removes, distasteful, but it removes the Tumas Oel because we no longer have a Kazai's mace located in any particular area. All we have now are basically bone chips scattered throughout the field. So the only thing left on the table is now a Tumas Maga, Tumas Masa, but there's no Tumas Oel concern. Under those circumstances, it does not require a Tziyun. That's the upshot and the conclusion of the Gemara regarding the fields that do and do not require a Tziyun. Numerous brisas seem to conflict with that, but the Gemara went through all the brisas. The Gemara answered up for all the brisas. If we have a field where we lost a cemetery, do we have enough evidence to suggest that it was plowed over? So machlokus in the brisa that we saw in the bottom of Hamid Beis, going to the top of Vav Amud Aleph. If there are trees there, is that going to be enough evidence that it was plowed through? Maybe. Tanakama said yes. According to Rav Yehuda, that's not enough evidence. You need somebody over there in the town, a Zakin or a Talmud Chacham, to tell you that was actually plowed over. And the Gemara says, just as another takeaway point from today's daf, Talmud Chacham in the community, he needs to know what's going on in the community because he can be relied upon to tell us the history of a field. On Vav Amud Aleph, other types of markings that indicate that there's a mace over there, but instead of a perimeter configuration, what happens if there's X marks the spot? What happens if there's a line? Two lines, three lines? So the Gemara went through other configurations of markings, and what do we assume in terms of where the mace is located based on the configuration? Going out and visiting fields and removing the kalayim. So the Mishnah says you could do so in Chol HaMoed. The Gemara was bothered by the fact that the Mishnah in Shkalim tells us that you go out on the 15th day of Adar. That's a month earlier. So which one is it? So the Gemara says, yes, both. In other words, not all crops come in at the same time. And yes, you go on the 15th, you go out on Chol HaMoed. If it sprouts earlier, you can even go out earlier, says Rav Yochanan in today's daf. Why are we hiring these people in Chol HaMoed? Meaning, why not hire them any other time? And cheap labor. Cheap labor? That's gonna drive us? And the Gemara's answer is yes, because it's public money. And so I know the answer is yes, but it's public money. And when it comes to public money, so that is a real consideration in terms of hiring cheaper labor. Okay, and that and the Gemara finally concluded, wait 1 second, why are we ripping out the Kalayim? Wasn't that an earlier stage of Takanas Beis Din? And at a later stage, didn't they just simply remove ownership of the land from the owner if the owner proved to be totally irresponsible when it comes to Kalayim? And again, the Gemara's answer to that is yes, meaning our Mishnah is just simply describing what was done in the earlier stages, but in the later stages, the Chachamim took out the hammer. And basically anyone who was irresponsible with his field and Kalayim, so they just simply took ownership away from the person. And finally, our last discussion today was a machlokas between Rav Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim in terms of watering trees and the area in between. And to what degree are we allowed to do that? The trees, the area in between. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov says only yes to the trees, not the area in between. The Chachamim disagree. Rashi brings the Chachamim back to what we learned on the first daf of the Masechta, that is Shitas Rebbe Meir, and the Gemara brought in an assortment of other brises also arguing over the extent in terms of what you're allowed to irrigate and to what degree you're allowed to irrigate. Adkan.